From Sundress Media Productions, this is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host is Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
You want the truth, you should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of. You.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank
Woo!
You.
Yeah.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
That's right, folks. Don't touch that dial.
Spectrum 360. For the sun, white sand beaches, palm trees, surf, and pina coladas in the beautiful Tampa Bay area in the state of Florida on the eastern coast of the Gulf of Mexico. What do you think is there?
Got the sun on my shoulders and my toes in the sand.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 9th of November, 2015.
You have an incoming transmission.
Welcome. I'm your Spectrum 360 host, Mark Skogman.
And hello to our listeners in Florida, Tampa Bay, and the United States. I'm associate producer and co-host Terry Weeks.
And I'm co-commentator Rebecca Marisol Kingsford.
Great. Looking forward to a great Spectrum 360 tonight. It's going to be a great program. Spectrum 360 is copyright 2015 by Mark Skogman. Copying and sharing the Spectrum 360 podcast for personal use is authorized and encouraged. On Spectrum 360 in this edition for Monday, the 9th of November, 2015. Focus of this program is all politics, as it often is on Spectrum 360. Segment 1, live in studio, the Spectrum 360 news summary in brief. Spectrum 360 will briefly discuss the news and events of the last week, and there's a lot of them. And then we'll have information about some upcoming events as well. And then segment 2, live in studio, Spectrum 360 coverage of the latest news regarding the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is an important issue and important news. There's been major developments just recently, just in the last week. Co-host Terry Weeks will lead this segment. And then segment 3, recorded the Jim Hightower commentary for this edition of Spectrum 360 on the subject of the musician Neil Young and Monsanto. What? Yes, you heard me right. Neil Young and Monsanto. Very interesting, actually. And very cool.
Monsanto has met a cultural power it cannot intimidate, censor, buy off, or escape from. I'll tell you who it is today on Hightower Radio.
Then segment 4, live in studio and recorded, Spectrum 360 continues its exclusive coverage of the Florida Fracking Summit Conference. It was conducted just 2 weeks ago. On Tuesday, the 27th of October, and Wednesday, the 28th of October, 2015, at the Holiday Inn in Fort Myers, Florida. This is part 2 of the coverage of this event by Spectrum 360. This event was wonderful, high quality, and attracted a range of very qualified and interesting speakers from across the country speaking on important topics related to fracking and the environment. If you care about Florida, its environment, wildlife, and residents, You need to pay attention to the information coming out of this event. Important.
And when there is a spill event, they hire people and they add more water to dilute it, hence the testing. So the solution to pollution is not dilution.
Yes.
And the good news is, even if they dilute it behind, to try to get the detectable levels down so they can clear it safe, this water testing technology that we want to arm the world with doesn't lie.
There will also be ongoing coverage of this event on Spectrum 360, as there is so much to cover from this great conference. Also later this week, Spectrum 360 will be releasing the first videos from the Florida Fracking Summit. Then you can listen and watch the presentations of the speakers at length. Tonight's segment features part two of the Scott Smith speech. We started that last week with part one. And this segment again features important information about water pollution and water testing. And then segment five, recorded from Hardball with Chris Matthews, an excerpt from his interview with Robert Redford about the new film Truth from Monday, the 2nd of November, 2015. That was a week ago today that Chris Matthews interviewed Robert Redford about that new film Truth. And remember, last week, Spectrum 360 did the Spectrum 360 film review of the film Truth. I've seen it. Co-host Terry Weeks has seen it.
Two thumbs up.
Yes, and we did a good review of it last week. Spectrum 360 will be covering the issues raised by this film with ongoing coverage and possibly some surprises in the future. We've got some things in the works, folks, as we take Spectrum 360 to the next level. Yes.
And now he's starring in a new film about a crisis in journalism. The movie's called Truth. It recalls the firestorm about the 2004 CBS 60 Minutes report investigating then-President George W. Bush's service records in the Texas Air National Guard. Several producers and executives at CBS lost their jobs because of that report, including the legendary CBS Evening News anchor Dan Rather.
And then on next week, Spectrum 360, more from the Florida Fracking Summit. And this is going to go on for several weeks, actually. And watch for the Florida Fracking Summit videos as they get posted in the next coming days and weeks. And then also next week, a preview of the School of America's Watch Vigil in Columbus, Georgia. That's coming up Friday, the 20th of November, Saturday, the 21st of November, and Sunday, the 22nd of November 2015 at the gates of Fort Benning. Very important event that's been going on for approximately 20 years. We'll be previewing that. And then that will happen the weekend right before the week of Thanksgiving. So that's what's going on. Remember to like Spectrum 360 on Facebook at Spectrum 360 Radio Program. And also remember the Spectrum 360 Podcast. Go to www.internetradiopros.com. Scroll down to the Spectrum 360 link, click on it, and choose the program date of your choice. Listen to Spectrum 360. Okay, that's the previews for this edition of Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 9th of November, 2015.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
Okay, on to segment one for this edition of Spectrum 360, and I would like to recognize the great work of Terry Weeks, associate producer and co-host of this program. She has a cold this week, and wow, that was a great sound effect. And even though she is ill with a cold, she still did work on two Spectrum 360 segments today, still came to the studio, still announcing, is even going to lead a segment, even with the cold that she has. So she's been a real trooper today. And I wish I had that Sweet Honey and the Rock song to play for you right now. I don't have it queued up. If I did, I'd play it for you right now.
Thank you.
Rebecca, your comment?
Yeah, did you get the memo that she's asking for a raise?
No.
It's going to pay me double what I'm making now.
It's on the desk in your studio.
Well, yeah, your voice has to sound better before you qualify for that. Right. Okay, on to the news summary segment in brief. News summary and brief on Spectrum 360. This last week saw a number of events happen, and I want to just cover them briefly, like we say in the news summary and brief segment. Last week, President Obama made his decision on the Keystone XL pipeline and vetoed it. Did not approve the Keystone XL pipeline. That was an interesting... My gosh, where are those things coming from? Is there a loose pneumatic hose in the...
It's the crowd going wild.
Oh, well, maybe that's a good thing. Oh, I see. I need to have that song rock and roll. No, I'm not going to do that. Anyway. And then also, this last Friday, 6 November 2015, was the U.S. presidential candidates from the Democratic Party. They had their Democratic Party U.S. Presidential Candidate Forum at Winthrop College in Rock Hill. And that was great. We heard from the three candidates that are still have active campaigns. And that was, of course, sitting U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. And I had to say that this was very interesting. Because it was not a debate. It was not a traditional debate. It was a candidate forum where the candidates spoke with a moderator. And the moderator is Rachel Maddow of the Maddow program from MSNBC. And it was uniformly good. All the candidates performed very well. And the format itself was interesting. And then not only did she ask tough questions of the candidates, contrary to what some of the Republicans say, that the Democrats don't get tough questions, they obviously... there's one of two things. Either they haven't watched or listened to the debates, or else they're just willing to deliberately lie about them and distort the facts. Because
I think it's actually because the Democrats are actually capable of talking about policy.
Oh.
Boom!
I didn't say that. Well, no, I think there's an element of truth in that. I really do. And that's, you know, it's valid. I mean, these things are happening, and it's just, it's unfortunate that it is. But there was a lot of tough questions from Rachel Maddow, and I enjoyed that. And then also she did a pick an envelope with questions in it feature that was very interesting, because it revealed the candidates in a way of just their personalities and their who they are as people personally, other than being political candidates and their political positions, which I think was interesting and illuminating. So that was very interesting, and I enjoyed that. I recorded it. I'm going to watch it again. And I just thought it was a very good format, a very good execution, and all the candidates and the moderator did well. Rachel Maddow was on All In with Chris Hayes on MSNBC tonight, and she was interviewed about her experience as the moderator. It was very interesting listening to that interview as well. So that was very interesting, I thought.
Isn't the circus in town this week? The Republican debate?
Well, there is a Republican Party U.S. presidential candidate debate tomorrow on Fox Business. That will be tomorrow, Tuesday, 10 November 2015. That should be interesting. They've all been interesting. And then, of course, this week on Saturday, 14 November 2015, is the next Democratic Party U.S. presidential candidate debate. So look forward to those two events. But the circus coming into town, that actually happens Saturday night at 11:30 p.m. on MSNBC on cable television, when Saturday Night Live aired, and it was hosted by Donald Trump.
And his hair.
And that was interesting.
I thought
that
was a squirrel.
Well, it is, but you're not supposed to say that. It's like one of those open secrets, like when Franklin Roosevelt was president and he had a lot of trouble walking because he had paralyzed legs. The media did not talk about that. Well, they don't talk about the squirrel and Donald Trump's hair either.
Yes, but that's where his information comes from, though.
But no, anyway, no. His hair is his hair, and, you know, I know it looks like Ted Koppel's, I think, but his hair is fine. I'm not going to criticize him for his hair. But it was interesting. There was one segment that they did, where there was a debate, and then Donald Trump was not participating in it. He was tweeting about it, about the Democratic Party U.S. presidential candidate debate, and that was truly funny. That was very, very funny. The other segments, the other sketches were mediocre, and one I thought was just downright offensive, where Cecily Strong and one other person, two women, pretended to be former porn stars for Donald Trump, and that was just, in my opinion, it was of poor taste
and kind of dumb.
Yeah, I'm just kind of dumb too. They failed on that one, but the other ones were mediocre. But the Donald Trump tweeting, that was great. That was brilliant. And of course, Weekend Update was pretty funny because they had drunk uncle being interviewed about his support of Donald Trump. That was pretty funny. That was pretty good as well. So there was a whole mix of segments on that. But that was interesting. And of course, Donald Trump was protested by people that are against his racist comments and his racist positions on immigration, et cetera. Oh, and the one funny thing about it was there was, I think it was Black Lives Matter or some other organization. I can't remember what the organization was offering a $5,000 reward for any audience member that would yell out at Donald Trump that he was racist. No audience member did it, but you know who did?
Uh-huh.
A cast member, Larry David. He mentioned it.
Larry David started the show doing his amazing impression of Bernie Sanders and then, yes, yelled out that Donald Trump is a racist.
Yes, that was hilarious. But since he wasn't a member of the audience, I don't think he was eligible for the reward. Chelsea, your comments? Rebecca?
One of the questions on that, because I know how Bernie has been running a really clean campaign, and one of the things he said, he's actually never like did anything like out of character against somebody he's been running with. So I wonder how he actually felt about the comment, because if it was like actually like picking on, you know, Donald, because that's something that he doesn't do.
Yeah, it was interesting. The whole thing was interesting, and it's been an interesting week. And then also, of course, there's this situation with the University of Missouri and its football team, and the president of the university, who just announced he was resigning today after being pressured by the University of Missouri football team, who is threatening to refuse to play unless he resigned, which would have, and this is why he actually resigned, according to a lot of the coverage, it would have cost the university $1 million in revenue.
You don't mess around with football.
Well, yes, I understand that, especially in the South. So that was a very interesting exercise of power by a majority black football team at the University of Missouri. And that was very, very interesting. And this is a university that's, you know, in the vicinity of Ferguson, Missouri, where, of course, Michael Brown was killed. And there were all these demonstrations and, unfortunately, even riots over the last year plus. So that was an interesting development. The Ben Carson controversy about details in his biography that appear to be there's questions about them, and he's being scrutinized for it, and then he's complaining because he's being scrutinized like a presidential candidate will be, and then his supporters are of course blaming the media for the scrutiny, and that's not appropriate. This is not media bias. This is the scrutiny that any presidential candidate gets, and it's been fair largely overall, and his supporters are just you know, they're recoiling from it because they think he's being, you know, he's being victimized or singled out. And I have to disagree with that. And also, one thing that he said that I want to just address just briefly, and that's the fact that he's saying that this country was started by amateurs and that he's an amateur. He has no professional experience as a politician. And that's a positive thing.
That's quite apparent.
Yeah, and that is one of his positive points of his candidacy is that he has no experience. What other industry or what other type of job or job description do we value having no experience at all? I mean, there's very few that.
Hello, I'm a neurosurgeon, but I've never done this before.
Yeah, and the question I'd like to make is, or the point I'd like to make is that Donald Trump, would Donald Trump hire Ben Carson to be the CEO of his real estate company, knowing that he has no experience in real estate? Donald Trump would not do that. He's way smarter than that. So that just it just deconstructs that argument that you shouldn't have experience, because Donald Trump wouldn't hire Ben Carson to run one of his companies, or anybody else who said they had no experience. And also, Ben Carson's staff, his campaign staff, those are professional people. He didn't hire amateurs for his own campaign staff that had no experience. So if no experience is such an asset, then I suggest that you hire an amateur campaign staff that has no experience too, and test your theory along with your candidacy. Boom, boom. And Rebecca, your thoughts?
Yeah, actually, with him being upset about them picking on him, our president for the last 8 years went through a battle with, like, where is the birth of his origin? I mean, like, every month it comes up, it seems like. And if he's going to be going for president, every little thing happens. You know, they find every little thing.
Oh, absolutely. As well they should, as well as I should.
So he's, I don't think he's going to be able to make it with all the scrutiny that happens.
Well, we'll see. You know, the scrutiny that he's getting and the criticism he's getting are for relatively minor things about his personal biography. They're not policy positions, and they're not...
Because he doesn't really have any.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not major scandals. So, you know, yes, there's a controversy here. Yes, there are questions, but are they major? No. I mean, questions about a West Point scholarship, question about, you know, questions about what he, how he conducted himself as a child and things like that, you know, or if he actually got a gun stuck into his side at a Popeye's chicken restaurant in Baltimore, Maryland. All these things are, they're important because there should be truth in these stories, but that's the only way that they're really important. They're really relatively minor issues. So anyway, we have information about a couple of upcoming events. Of course, the first one I already spoke about briefly, and that is the School of America's Watch Vigil in Columbus, Georgia. That's Friday, the 20th of November through Sunday, the 22nd of November. Search online for School of America's Watch. Get involved. This is an important event and teach-in that's been happening for 20 years at the gates of Fort Benning Army Base in Columbus. And Terry, you have information about another event, which is actually tomorrow, or actually two events, correct?
Actually, two events. Yeah, tomorrow is a big day for social and economic justice in Tampa Bay. The Tampa Bay Fight for 15, that's the group that seeks to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, is having a day of action tomorrow. That's tomorrow, Tuesday, November 10th. It's going to be at 4 o'clock at Lakes Gaslight Square Park in Tampa. There's going to be a rally, speakers, music, etc. So that's at 4 p.m. tomorrow at Gaslight Park, 410 North Franklin Street in Tampa. And as soon as that's over, you can head over to St. Pete for another great event. WMNF and the Palladium Theater are presenting an evening with Richard D. Wolf. Richard Wolf is a professor of economics emeritus from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. He taught economics there from 1973 to 2008. He's currently a visiting professor in the graduate program in international affairs of the New School University in New York City. He's an American economist who is well known for his work on Marxian economics, economic methodology, and class analysis, and he presents a thoughtful, fascinating, and seldom heard critique of the American economic system. He's really very interesting. Richard Wolf will be speaking tomorrow, November 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Palladium Theater in St. Pete.
Very good. And I've actually met Richard D. Wolf multiple times and covered him as well at the Left Forum in New York City. And he's a great speaker, very intelligent man. He also has an economics radio program called Economic Update, which airs locally on WMNF Community Radio in Tampa. That's 88.5 megahertz on the FM dial. WMNF, your community radio here. Okay, that ends that segment. We'll be back with the next segment in just a moment.
Okay, after 6 years of secret negotiations, the U.S. Trade Representative has finally released the full text of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. And it is available for all to see and review on the website of the U.S. Trade Representative. If you care to, it's over 2,000 pages long, broken into 30 separate chapters, as well as various indexes and appendices. Is it as bad as its critics feared? Well, according to Lori Wallach, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, it's worse. She said that the text shows that the TPP would offshore more American jobs, lower our wages, flood us with unsafe imported food, and expose our laws to attack in foreign tribunals. Others agree. The TPP is a disaster for jobs and the environment and our democracy. It is the latest stage in the corporate capture of our society, said Nick Dearden, Executive Director of Global Justice Now. Michael Broun, Executive Director of the Sierra Club, stated that the Trans-Pacific Partnership threatens our families, our communities, and our environment. It's no surprise that the deal is rife with polluter giveaways that would undermine decades of environmental progress, threaten our climate, and fail to adequately protect wildlife because big polluters help write the deal. And from Communication Workers of America President Chris Shelton, Even a cursory review demonstrates how this trade deal fails working families. It forces U.S. workers to compete with the 65-cent-an-hour wages of Vietnamese workers and the slave labor employed in Malaysia. It allows multinational corporations to challenge environmental, financial, consumer, and other regulations through international tribunals, and it pays lip service to addressing real concerns about currency manipulation that costs American jobs and leads to more jobs being sent offshore.
Ah, you're good.
Yeah. Jeffrey Sachs, director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University, observed that the worst parts of the agreement are the corporate powers implicitly granted in the investor-state dispute settlement system. This is something we've discussed before in this program. Corporations are already using investor-state dispute settlement provisions in existing trade agreements to harass governments in order to frustrate any regulations or judicial decisions that negatively impact corporate interests. Sachs believes that the system proposed in the TPP is a dangerous and unnecessary grant of power to investors and a blow to the judicial systems of all the signatory countries. Sachs is also disappointed by the provisions in the development, labor, and environmental chapters. They defend global economic development, labor standards, and environmental sustainability, but he notes that they lack any specific enforcement powers. Corporations may be able to force arbitration tribunals to defend their investor rights, but workers can't do the same. And climate change is not even mentioned. So, what happens next? Well, President Obama has stated that he intends to sign the deal. This triggers two of the timelines set up by Trade Promotion Authority, or TPA, that Congress passed back in June. The first is the 90-day clock. TPA requires the president to wait 90 days after announcing his intent to sign a trade deal before actually signing it. The second timeline is the 60-day clock. TPA requires that the terms of any trade deal be made public for at least 60 days before Congress can consider it. Because the administration released the text at the same time it announced its intent to sign, this 60-day clock has no practical effect. But that does not mean that Congress will be taking up the legislation needed to implement the TPP in February. Congress certainly could begin considering it once Obama signed it, but TPA does not require that. Instead, the decision on when to formally begin deliberations rests with the congressional leaders. Once they introduce the implementing legislation, Congress then will have at most 90 days to hold an up or down vote. That's the only vote they get. This legislation cannot be filibustered or buried in committee, so the common ways in which legislation gets killed on Capitol Hill aren't applicable. How quickly the congressional leaders are going to move on TPP really depends partly on when the administration will have that implementing legislation ready. And since the TPP is a big, complex deal, the implementing legislation probably will be too. And more importantly, congressional leaders and the administration are be looking very carefully to see if they've got the votes to pass the TPP. And on that score, the TPP is heading into some really stiff political winds as we're going into campaign season 2016. It took two votes to pass Trade Promotion Authority, and that vote was far from unanimous. An examination of the text of the TPP reveals that several demands made by Congress and key constituencies were not met. Hillary Clinton, who once championed the TPP, now says she opposes it. Bernie Sanders has consistently opposed the trade agreement. Now many Democratic lawmakers are feeling pressure to follow their leads. That pressure will likely grow as we move closer to Election Day. Republicans historically vote overwhelmingly for trade deals, but several GOP candidates already oppose the TPP, and the enthusiasm in the ranks of the GOP for giving Obama a major legislative victory is very low. So the administration's undoubtedly going to apply a lot of pressure here, but the TPP is far from a done deal. So there's still an opportunity for its opponents to pressure legislators to vote no on this deal.
Great. Thanks to co-host Terry Weeks for that segment. And commentator Rebecca Marisol Kingsford has a statement she's going to read from the Communication Workers of America regarding the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Rebecca?
Thanks, Mark. Because this is such an important issue, we're going to read the entire statement from the Communications Workers of America. With the release of the Trans-Pacific Partnership text, it is finally time to learn whether the TPP is in fact nothing more than the latest in a long line of trade agreements negotiated by and for the 1%. The Communications Workers of America, like many others, is reviewing the text. But based on what we've already seen and learned about the deal, we're not likely to change our position that this TPP is a disaster for working families and communities. Even a currency review demonstrates how this trade deal fails working families. It forces U.S. workers to compete with a 65-cent an hour wage on Vietnamese workers and slave labor employed in Malaysia, and allows multinational corporations to challenge the environmental, financial, consumer, and other regulations through international tribunals and outside the court system of member countries. It pays lip service to addressing the real concerns about the currency manipulation that costs Americans jobs and leads to more jobs being sent offshore. And it allies the U.S. with countries that abuse their citizens, including Brunei, Vietnam, and Malaysia. For nearly 6 years from the start of negotiations that were actually kept secret from the public but gave full access to 600 corporate lobbyists, we've known who have that will now benefit from the TPP. CWA has a broad coalition of environmental consumers, faith, immigrant rights, and students, and many other groups continue to organize and mobilize against the deal and to hold accountable members of Congress who have chosen to side with the 1%.
Very good. Thank you for reading that. That's an important statement from the Communication Workers of America. Notification, full disclosure, I have worked with the Communication Workers of America on anti-TPP events, both in Tampa and Orlando, and I have taken an editorial position myself personally against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and staff here, Terry and Rebecca, do you have any notifications of full disclosure on your position on this editorially?
Absolutely. I, too, am opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. I was one who brought a motion before the Democratic Executive Committee of Pinellas County to pass a resolution opposing it, which they did pass.
That's correct. That's right. I remember that. And Rebecca?
And for myself, coming out of a history where men and women in my family have started labor unions in our country and have fought hard in this country, even my dad, who was a Vietnam vet, I think it's wrong. I just think it's completely wrong. I think it's wrong to keep building the monarchy and allowing the 1% to keep doing what they're doing and letting it idly go by. It's not right.
Great. Well said. Thank you so much.
The Canadian rocker and master storyteller Neil Young says, "Music is a universal language." Yes, and when created by a people's champion like him, music can bring down the high and mighty, just as Joshua's trumpeters brought down the walls of Jericho. Or, in Neil's case, the walls of Monsanto. He has issued a powerful new album titled The Monsanto Years, taking on the arrogant gene manipulator and avaricious pesticide merchant for its relentless attempt to profiteer at the expense of family farmers, consumers, people's democratic rights, and nature itself. On the title track, Young sings this verse, "The farmer knows he's got to grow what he can sell, Monsanto, Monsanto." So he signs a deal for GMOs that makes life hell with Monsanto, Monsanto. Every year he buys the patented seeds, poison ready, they're what the corporation needs, Monsanto. Poor Monsanto. It says that Young's lyrical truth has hurt its feelings. Actually, Monsanto has no feelings, since it's a corporation, a paper construct created solely for the purpose of maximizing the profits and minimizing the obligations of its big shareholders. Nonetheless, the global giant whined in an official corporate statement that Young's song ignores, quote, "what we do every day to help make agriculture more sustainable." But sustainable for whom? By its actions every day, Monsanto shows that the answer is sustainable for the corporate exploiter. As Young put it, corporations don't have children. They don't have feeling or soul. They don't depend on uncontaminated water, clean air, or healthy food to survive. They're beholden to one thing, the bottom line. I choose to speak truth to this economic power. This is Jim Hightower saying, in Neil Young's music, mighty Monsanto has met a freewheeling cultural power it cannot intimidate, buy out, censor, or escape from.
If you like these feisty pops of populism that Hightower zings out on the airwaves, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter provides the in-depth lowdown on what the greed heads of Wall Street and the boneheads of Washington are doing to us behind the scenes. With Hightower's saucy Texas humor and truth-telling populist perspective, the lowdown literally can lift you up. And get this, you can have the lowdown delivered to your mailbox or email each month for only $15 a year. Yes, 12 issues, only $15. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.org.
I'd like to tell my Spectrum 360 listeners about my friends at Ocean 6. Ocean 6 is a company that provides a variety of high-quality packaged seafood, chicken, pork, and beef products, frozen, and delivered directly to the front door of your residence. It doesn't get any easier than that. The food is great, the service is excellent, and I am a customer of Ocean 6 myself. Lately, I've been enjoying using their seafood products, especially my favorites, the jumbo shrimp and the shrimp scampi. Good. To get yours, you can call the same man who provides Ocean 6 products for my family. His name is Mark, like myself, and you can call him at 727-623-8015. That's 727-623-8015. The Ocean 6 website is ocean6.net. Again, that's ocean6.net. Get it? .net. Like the net where that wonderful Ocean 6 seafood comes from. Call or click today and get yours.
Okay, on to the next segment, which is our continuing exclusive coverage of the Florida Fracking Summit. And this is the speech by Scott Smith. This is part two about the organization Water Defense, water pollution, and how we can test it and find out what's in our water and defend ourselves against pollution that's in our water. This is fascinating, actually. You'd think a subject like this would be boring and mundane. This man has been, since 2010, has been to 60 different industrial oil disaster sites in the United States. It's sad that we've had that many, but he's been to every single one. This man knows more about the subject than anybody I've ever met. Scott Smith.
I was 500,000 people, and in people's homes, chloroform, other chemicals, clear colorless coming out in that woman's sink in that shower. And you know, you see her smiling there? She's smiling because she was armed with the ability to know what's in her water with results that would stand up, and she did not have to back down. Yes. You also have a lot of golf courses, but I'm not going to talk about that. I don't want to get shot. Major source of phosphorus. So oil wastewater used to irrigate crops. Anybody, you know, but extreme energy extraction classified as fracked natural gas, fracked oil, cyclic steam stimulation, all, you know, that's why Daryl and Noah did a great job explaining all those methods. It's extreme energy extraction, which involves massive depletion of clean water, injection of chemicals that aren't disclosed, but we can find those chemicals. So this, with all the disasters I've been through in 2014 at Water Defense, they call me and say, Scott, there's an article in the New York Times about oil wastewater being used to irrigate crops. I said, you're kidding me. That's one place I don't want to go to California. You want to spend the money to send me? I'll go to California. So I find myself standing in the middle of almonds, tangerines, and a variety of crops with tar balls and oil slicks that were worse and smelled worse than the BP Gulf of Mexico disaster. I wore Tyvek suits. I lived there for 4 months. Worked with this, and this is not even a disaster. It's every day. So this, it was worse than Deepwater Horizon. Absolutely worse than Deepwater Horizon. The fumes in the air, the workers in the fields, the air quality, everything about it. And this was the subject of a May 1st cover story in the Sunday edition of the LA Times. You can only imagine what this started with the oil companies. But several of the scientists from the oil companies have now validated this testing. That you can't argue with what's in the water when you keep it on the science. and we found methylene chloride. Now, I've seen that's in one of these presentations, methylene chloride, volatile, gets mixed in. It's a very powerful solvent that's being mixed in with the steam to extract the oil. And what I did is I pulled up several of the oil company patents that all their patents disclose these chemicals. And then I go look for them. And when the LA Times learned about these patents, that gave them the validity to run the story because it's public domain. The oil companies are disclosing what they're using because they're trying to patent it. And this, you know, is anybody familiar with this story out of Los Angeles? I mean, does everyone probably shops for organic foods? Would you find it surprising for me to tell you that there are no standards for what's in your crops? The only crop testing that is done is for the economic value for salt and other minerals that may lower the yields. So we're working to call for standards for crop testing. Toxicologists have called me. We work with several, one from NYU. All the safe water standards in this country are based on the premise that water and contamination are in equilibrium. You look at these flow rates, in all these contamination sites. Well, when we talk about equilibrium, I want to make sure everybody understands what I'm saying. To take water for a split second and assume that it's in equilibrium, that's just not accurate, because these discharge pipes in California, if it's the Navajo Nation, anywhere, they're flowing constantly, and the flow of contamination is not even. So if you're that person that is exposed to high rates of benzene, and you get sick, you really don't care that someone took a split second grab sample and, you know, declared the water safe. This is mutated crop testing. Navajo Nation, this is the most recent in Shiprock, New Mexico. This is why I'm optimistic. While I was sitting here today at the break, the president of the Navajo Nation has now reached out with the Farm Board. The Navajo Nation is setting a precedent in this country that we can all proudly point to as an example, and we all need to pay attention. The farmers have refused to use the contaminated water. We went out there, we proved the baseline sediment versus the impacted sediment, and this is all on YouTube on the Water Defense site. But the point is, this gives me great hope, because we are empowering communities to stand up. And the farmers in the Navajo Nation have done what agricultural industry people in outside in California won't do. And I get it, it's complicated. They're scared. They're dealing with oil companies. They're dealing with the organic companies. And it's that ability to give the community to stand up. So that can be done right here in Florida if you just focus on what's in the water. Fracking and any contamination can be stopped. And this is where you're seeing corn get mutated. They've never seen this. And again, we talk about the other complicit parties. It's not just the oil companies. Where's the stance from Whole Foods? Where are the standards with organic foods? If they want to charge the big premium, why aren't they coming to the table and declaring, well, you know, forget about it. If you're irrigating these crops with oil wastewater or spilled from the EPA Animas River spill, and there are dangerous metals and toxins in the crops, what does organic mean anymore? 2013, Mayflower, Arkansas, and how many people are familiar with the ExxonMobil tar sands oil spill? Is everyone familiar that this is less than a half an hour away from the Clinton Presidential Library and the Clinton Global Initiative? We reached out. Now, I'm not here to talk about political beliefs, but it's a systemic issue in the country with lobbying. It's not the fault of any elected official, and there's really no difference between Republican or Democrat. It's about holding individuals accountable with the data. And Mayflower, Arkansas is a very important point in water defense. That's when Mark Ruffalo saw me on the news and called me and said, I founded Water Defense. I haven't been able to find water testing technology that couldn't be gamed. How would you like to meet me and join me? And I'm going to show my age. My immediate response when my communications people reached out, I said, what? And they said, the Hulk is trying to reach you. I said, what do you mean, Lou Ferrigno or you know, or Bill Bixby? So the point is this is about the work. And that is a true story of him reaching out and shutting down Water Defense in 2013 because he couldn't find technology that couldn't be gained. So I'm out in the Arkansas in the middle there. And it's also, he told me there are no coincidences, Scott. And I really believe that today because the League of Women Voters, I just sat randomly and I'm sitting with the president of Lee County. And in 2013, the most effective town hall meeting was put on by the League of Women Voters that affected change, helped people that couldn't help themselves, and helped me get important data out about the spread of the oil and what was really going on. So I do believe there are no coincidences, and the League of Women Voters, I've been to 60 disasters, is a model organization in their whole approach on bringing people together. So it was just an added bonus to be here and realize the League of Women Voters are here in Florida. This is Mayflower, Arkansas, diluted bitumen, stark tar sands oil. I'm sure everyone's familiar with that. And this is public property, and you know, we have a right, a fundamental human right to know what's in our water, especially on public property and wetlands. This is what I don't want to see happen in Florida. But does it surprise anybody to know that the response to this tar sands oil spill was bulldozing the wetlands April 2nd, and that's April 23rd. I don't want to see that happen in Florida. And when there is a spill event, they hire people and they add more water to dilute it, hence the testing. So the solution to pollution is not dilution. And the good news is, even if they dilute it behind, to try to get the detectable levels down so they can declare it safe, this water testing technology that we want to arm the world with doesn't lie. If the contaminationers are in there, it's in there, period. Again, I don't think anybody wants to see that in the wetlands and marshlands of Florida. And I'd like to be redundant here. That again, that's April 2nd and then May 18th, 2013. And this illustrates in the Mayflower oil spill. This was presented again at the town hall hosted by the League of Women Voters in Arkansas, and these are the testing sites. This is so simple, it's almost, I still don't believe it myself, so it's hard for me to, and the people in the audience to believe it, that all I did is go to these different points and map out the spread of the oil, and ExxonMobil and all the government people were saying there's no oil in Lake Conway, there's no oil in Lake Conway. I found the oil of Lake Conway, and I mashed up some of these solvents like cyclohexane, methylene chloride, that first of all, they weren't testing for, but I went to their material safety data sheets and their patents and found out what they use. So this can be done and you can arm the community. It's just being systematic about what's in the water. And had Mayflower had baseline readings before these events, that would have been even more helpful. That's why I can't stress enough taking baseline readings in Florida. And don't worry, I'm not going to go through all these, but these are the kind of things we look for, you know, all these, you know, naphthalene and a various, you know, all these nasty chemicals. And you can Google what, you know, this will be available so you can Google all these different chemicals. This is just illustrates how we tested the whole water column and what we found. Now, this is Pennsylvania. Bathtubs. Everyone thinks that water, you think that water is safe? Would you find it hard to believe if I told you the concentrations of naphthalene and toluene are greater than a lot of the pictures you're seeing here? This proves clear, colorless, odorless. So we have events in Pennsylvania where people are getting sick and getting cancer. The responsible party is sitting in drinking water. They're bathing this. This goes to my point about the video camera, and we need to test water the way we encounter it. No one's taking a shower for a split second. And just think if people could take a shower in a split second, how much water we'd save. We'd save a lot of water. So what we test is over a 30-minute period, what exposure is. and that is sink water where there's acetone in the sink, combined with the xylene, combined with the naphthalene. And it is our belief at Water Defense and my belief we're all connected by water, and there is no such thing as that's something that happens in another part of the country. Look at those crops as an example, because the results of extreme energy extraction, if you buy organic produce or you buy almonds, is coming into your home, and we don't really know what's in there, but we're going to know what's in there. And all these transportation of the Bakken oil, which is highly flammable, is in that corridor and ending up in New Jersey. So again, I'm so thankful that it was Jackie Lopez that reached out to me. I had no idea about this fracking thing in Florida. And as many disasters I've been, there's still far more that I don't know than I know. And is constantly learning. Like I had the reaction to Florida fracking like I did to California. I had no idea this was going on or they're gonna try to ramp this up here. And in 2011, Loch Meganic oil train explosion, everyone's familiar with that probably. 29-year-old girl vaporized like Hiroshima with about 30 people. When I read that, I got in my car from Boston area where I live. I went there, found oil downstream. I couldn't get any baseline, so I went to the Bakken oil fields and I pumped the oil out of a well myself. This is all available on video too. And you want to know about this explosive oil? You know, it's rather similar wherever in the country it's fracked. You're going 5,000 to 11,000 feet beneath the earth. You have dissolved gases. Simply stated, the difference between this extreme energy fracked oil and conventional Beverly Hills crude oil that's on the surface is the fact of a Coke versus still water. If you shake up still water, it's in open, the top, it's not gonna go everywhere. Well, if you shake up Coke, there's dissolved gases, CO2 in there. You shake that up, it goes everywhere. Well, with Bakken oil, you shake it up and it gets punctured in a truck or a tanker and there's any spark, you've got a very, very intense explosion on your hands. And this is actually at an explosion in the Bakken oil fields where I was fingerprinting, and I'm building a database. So Water Defense is gonna have a mapping system that hopefully will be done in the next 90 days. So anybody can go online and say, well, how does the baseline Bakken oil compare to my contamination in Florida? How does the baseline, you know, Lynchburg, Virginia Bakken oil spill compare to what's in my tub on Cape Cod and so on? You get what we're trying to do and educate the public on this.
You can't just wish and hope for something to come true. You have to make it happen.
For in the final analysis, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures. And we are all mortal.
Okay, and that was coverage of the Florida Fracking Summit on Spectrum 360. That was from Tuesday, the 27th of October, 2015, at the conference in Fort Myers, Florida, just a couple of weeks ago. It'll be 2 weeks ago tomorrow. What a great conference. What a great speaker. I learned so much from this man. Became a near instant fan of him, Water Defense, and his products that he's selling through Opflex to use for water testing. This is just great. And the last segment of Spectrum 360, we're going to delay that until next week. The interview that was conducted by Chris Matthews of Hardball with Robert Redford. We had an excerpt that we were going to play for that. I'm going to save that for next week and combine that with other coverage that we're going to be doing related to the George W. Bush administration and the film Truth. And it's going to be pretty interesting. And you just wait. We're going to have some surprises for you on Spectrum 360. So that completes the coverage of Spectrum 360 for today, Monday, which is the 9th of November, 2015. Terry and Rebecca, your final comments for this program?
Just want to remind everybody, don't forget the Fight for 15 event, 4 o'clock tomorrow in Likes Gaslight Park in Tampa, and then come on over to St. Pete to catch Richard D. Wolfe at the Palladium Theater at 7:30 p.m. in St. Pete.
Very good. And Rebecca?
Yep. Just to repeat something I thought was really cool what she just said. most of the things that we do on the show is not a Republican versus a Democrat issue. It's a human issue. It's something, loving your neighbor, being kind, loving this planet, doing something about it. So do something about it. Love your neighbor, be kind, and it's more than just my guy versus your guy. It's just actually do something amazing. Love you guys. Have a good week.
And also remember the School of America's Watch Vigil, which is coming up Friday, the 20th of November through Sunday, the 22nd of November 2015 in Columbus, Georgia. This is a big event. There's been as many as 20,000 people there. There are over 100 different individual events that usually take place on a typical School of America's Watch Vigil. All kinds of teach-ins about, something as diverse as organic living and sustainable living to Veterans for Peace, peacemakers, all kinds of aspects of militarism and how we can create a more peaceful world. And of course, closing the School of Americas, also known as the School of Assassins, which is on the grounds of the Fort Benning Army Base in Columbus, Georgia. And this demonstration is not against the Army or the United States military. It's against this school, which trains people that they go back to their country and then they oppress their own people in Central and South American countries. And this is unacceptable. Join us next week for more Spectrum 360. Woo-hoo!